You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies. It's the Massive Report podcast, and we're coming to you from, as Ori Benatar would say, the most wonderful place in the world, the best place to be in the world, Saucy Brew Works. Bart Logan with you. I'm pinch hitting for Brian Phillips. He's in North Carolina. Don't worry. He will be back soon. We've got Alex Stanek with us. We've got Pat Murphy with us. Ori, as I mentioned, Sam Fahmy on the ones and twos. We got a little bit to talk about. Columbus Crew, a game of some import coming up this weekend. And a couple games of some import that came occurred last week. Most notably, the first of the heated rivalry between Columbus Crew and Austin FC. I kid. But we will have to discuss what happened down in Texas, as well as maybe touch on a little bit in Philadelphia. But I do want a quick throw it to Ori. I gave him a heads up, and I told him that I'd catch him right in mid-shoe. For the saucy copy, so let's hear it, Ori.
Yeah, I'm testing the menu every week, so I'm trying their saucy bread. It's very nice, very garlicky, very good.
He's not sharing, folks.
I offered to share. If you guys want, you can have. There's plenty of bread for everybody.
All right, fine.
Hand yeah, let's have the bread. Come on.
This is great radio.
Saucy Brew Works is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Come by, 443. West 3rd Avenue. Get some food, get some beer, have some fun, play some Jeopardy or Trivia on weeknights. So, yeah, come by Saucy Brew Works. And now let's talk soccer.
Yeah, come by and see us. Well, speaking of saucy, it was a saucy match down there in Austin. You know, fans getting up at it. A Austin team that looked probably as strong as I've seen them. Granted, I haven't gone out of my way to watch much Austin FC. We were hoping, I think, you know, myself at least, hoping to see that first MLS goal scored in Cutie Stadium or whatever it's called down there. It did not come. It should have come, but it was stolen from us. We'll get to the penalty that wasn't. But Pat Murphy, I know you actually made the trek down to Austin. So let's hear, what was it like? You know, what was the environment like? And maybe talk a little bit about this game.
Well, the environment was hot, but that's Austin in the summer.
Yeah. Were you able to get back after the game?
Yes, but we didn't leave until well afterwards, so everyone was gone at that point. To be entirely honest with you, it's a cool stadium. We'll talk about the stadium here soon. I don't think it quite ranks up with the new lower.com field, but in terms of MLS stadiums I've been to, it's certainly up there. I'd compare it similarly to Toronto's BMO Field in terms of the way it's built. Goes down in the ground like lower.com field does, or lower.com field. I'm still getting used to that.
Lower field.
The LDC.
Yeah, it is lower actually
field,
lower.
C-bus. Loco.
But cool atmosphere. They had a very Hispanic feel to their supporters section, and I don't know how much they showed on TV, but a lot of their banners are in Spanish. But it was kind of that constant drumming, constant singing, like full songs type of thing that you see a lot in Liga MX.
The 7-4 song?
It was hard to decipher. But I did spend the first 10-15 minutes of the game, as Ori tweeted from the Mass Report account from home, out in the concourse just kind of listening, just to kind of get a sense of it. And it was a cool atmosphere, especially, as we'll get into the actual game. But Austin came out fast, and I think that got the crowd even more into it. It would have been a crazy atmosphere had they scored 10 seconds in, but they didn't. And the stadium was cool. I think it was, I thought while we were sitting there, I think at halftime, that if Anthony Precourt stays in Columbus and builds a stadium, all the things he said he couldn't do here, like, would I have been happy with this as the stadium that got built? And I think so. It wasn't in the middle of downtown like lower.com field is, but it was kind of weird. You drive out a little ways, and you're in kind of an industrial area, as we've heard. But there's definitely breweries around there. We made a stop at Oscar Blues, where a bunch of Crew fans were, and, Austin fans there who were very cordial. I think the Twitter beef was set aside, or maybe is overblown by certain people. But, yeah, it was a good time. The walk from the brewery to the stadium was rather sweaty. I will say that. But I think Crew fans are going to deal with that here too. From time, maybe not as hot, but are going to deal with that at the new stadium. You know, the march and things they want to do. So, yeah, I think you know I'd give it a solid. You know, if you're comparing it to other atmospheres, I'd give it a solid. You know, A minus. And I don't mean that as a slight. You know, I think A plus type things are Atlanta. You know, LAFC, from what I understand, and you know we can grade what lower.com field is next week.
Quick question, Murph. Couple questions. So first of all, one question, one comment. I'm not surprised that most Austin fans were pretty cool. I think one thing that a lot of people are forgetting is that we mocked them mercilessly during the relocation thing because there were like eight people who were turning up to those like city council meetings. And like all eight of those guys are jerks, right? But it's like eight dudes, and they've got a lot of season ticket holders now. So glad that the rest of the fan base is pretty cool. My question is on Discount Tire. Which is right next to the stadium. How was the tire selection? I think that's a unique thing that that Austin Stadium has that nobody else does, where you can watch a game and then go get discounted tires right after. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
I did not experience the Discount Tire. I was aware that it was built there just from hearing about it. I think that's on one side of the stadium that we didn't walk all the way around to. I will say in the trying to be fair here, the Crew for 22 years has had a chance to buy all your home good needs as you left Mapfre Stadium.
I think that's where Anthony Precourt got the idea, yeah. Murph. I wondered if you had any reporting on that.
Check that out, no.
Okay. So, I'll look for the article.
So my question is, did you see any Crew fans sneaking into the bathrooms to try to, you know, completely destroy them, as we are wont to do?
I did not. It's funny. So Jacob Myers from the Dispatch and I were on the same flight flying down there, flights plural. And we landed in Austin, and right as I turned on my phone, he texted me and said, "Chris Bills is getting destroyed by Crew fans on Twitter." And I was like, What happened? And
it's a Monday.
So we got off the plane. He showed me the video, and we actually met up with Chris Saturday night, and he tried to he explained what he meant and admitted that it probably came across differently than his intention in that video.
So he might have embellished a little bit potentially.
No, honestly, the video that he's talking about, I was aware of. There is a security video of a Crew fan. I don't know if it's after a loss. I don't know the scenario behind it, but that kicks down a stall door in one of the bathrooms at historic Crew Stadium. And I think what didn't get said by Chris was that stall door remained down, I believe, until new ownership took over. Mm-hmm. And
was
so
that
like
4 years with a stall.
Well,
door
I don't know right exactly there? When it was. So I don't
Listen,
know if
stall doors are expensive. All right, man.
Yeah.
He's just a small hedge fund child of rich people. So you know it's.
Yeah. Yes. I think there are two sides to every story, and Chris is clearly covering Austin, starting a new subscriber-based company that needs Austin fans to be on board, right? And you know, I Chris and I had this conversation. We talked about it, Chris, Jacob, and I. You know that. If you're going to do that, I think you also have to admit that Precourt left that place in an undesirable situation. Mm-hmm. For instance, I know that Dee Haslam walked into the offices at Historic Crew Stadium for the first time and was appalled at the condition of the carpet, the cubicles, all that. I mean, they literally took everything out, recarpeted it, things like that that just should have been done, you know, every couple years or, you know, whatever. So, yes. Did one angry Crew fan for one reason or another kick down a door and did other things probably there's probably other stuff too. I mean, you know, drunk people do stupid things after losses
probably
or when they're mad.
Happens at every stadium.
Correct.
In the world.
And I think that's the difference is like this and one thing that Chris's point I think was that Austin didn't want to have this game.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't this was a league decision to put the game to have the game at all and then to put it in Austin. And, you know, he's told us that you know, they were concerned just because of the animosity, not necessarily that incident, but that was the one that got brought up, that there might be issues. And there weren't, you know, I think we all know how Crew fans have been. I think for the most part, when they travel, they do good things. And I think there are Crew fans that had they traveled might, you know, everybody has their they're rowdies, they're idiots, and I don't mean idiots that negatively, but, you know, so... Ours were
too busy shopping for tires, Murph.
Which, fortunately, it all went off without a hitch in terms of the crew fans being there, and I thought the atmosphere was cool. I thought it played a part in the game, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see who does score that first goal at Q2 Stadium, because they've got Portland coming in next week.
I think, you know, just a couple things, and we can actually get to the game. First of all, I think Chris Bills buried the lead in this case, which is that Anthony Precourt installed security cameras in the bathrooms
at
Crew
Stadium.
Man. That is really, really disgusting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough to comment on that. I don't know how the footage was.
Unless they're X-ray cameras, there's only one answer.
Well,
to
I mean,
that.
They could have been installed before the Precourt era, I guess, was my point.
Oh, you're saying Lamar Hunt? No, I don't think so.
I mean, I don't know. No. I don't want to say anything.
It sounds like a Precourt thing, though, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
I don't know. I don't want to.
If we're criticizing
Chris for saying things that may or may not have been true, we should probably avoid that.
Murph, my sources are absolutely perfect, and I will put my journalism up against anyone's.
You know, obviously, this sort of counter-narrative propaganda, if you will, that's trying to create a false sense of victimhood around Austin, it's just not a good look. And we can kind of leave it at that and talk. We do have a game to talk about. And for a 0-0 draw, it was not without action. I mean, you touched on it earlier there, Murph. Austin nearly scoring 10, 11 seconds in, you know, shades of Justin Meerum. And Eloy Room challenged. Of course, there was the penalty that wasn't Don Garber. But Ori and Murph, I don't know, either of you, you're our, expert analysts, I should say. So walk us through the game. What are the big highlights and milestones from it?
That's master expert analyst
there
to you.
There you go.
But... you know, the fact that the game had a lot of intensity, I think, fed from the fans. And you could tell that both teams had this game circled on their calendar twice. Caleb Porter said it. We know fans want us to win this game. We know Crew fans want to beat Austin. And I think Austin fans circled this, too. Besides the fact that, you know, the history of these two teams and these two cities in MLS, this is Austin's second game in their new stadium against the defending champions. This is a really important game for them. One of their few interconference this season. One of two. So they came out there and played really well. I thought Hector Jimenez helped to unlock a lot of the transition in that game. But
well, it helps when only one person is defending the entire left-hand side.
Right, yeah. I mean, to me, the biggest thing of the first half, Kevin Molino, and that's something I asked Caleb Porter 2 weeks ago. We know so much about Molino's attacking ability. Can he defend like we've seen Pedro, Diaz, Etienne defend a high line? Matan also, I think, has shown defensive abilities and intensity to get in front of men one-on-one and try to win possession back. Molino didn't show that. His defensive work rate wasn't good enough throughout the time he was playing. But the thing with Columbus in these first 10 games, and that game really proved the pattern currently, is the lack of creating good chances. And I talked about this in the What We Learned for this week on MassiveReport.com. Their expected goals number, their XG, the new advanced statistic everyone's using in soccer, and how it's the lowest in the league by a considerable amount. They have an expected goal total of 9 in 10 games, and they've scored 7 goals that aren't own goals. So they're not creating good enough chances. They're not converting their best chances. Their best chance of that game, that Caleb Porter highlighted, that Jossy Zardes open near post run, has a left foot shot right in front of Stuver, hesitates a little bit. Those, and Porter literally said, Jossy has to score those. And you got to capitalize on your best chances. But the problem is Columbus isn't creating enough of those best chances. The offense is trying to cross too much from the right. The crosses aren't getting into Jossy. You see a very few guys running for those outside 18-yard box rebounds that we've seen the Crew concede goals on a lot of times this year.
The Philly game.
Yeah, Jossy's always running towards the six, or you've got somebody trying to go far post. But usually it's too far post. You saw Zellerayan take some shots, and I think that's good. That helps to gain some confidence. And the Crew was feeding off of the energy of Austin FC players' energy, the crowd. But overall, it's just the lack of offensive ingenuity, consistent chance creation. It's not good enough right now. they know that they haven't played their best game. They need to get to that point where they start playing their best games, because you're playing the best team in the Eastern Conference to open your new stadium against New England. Then you go to Cincinnati for a huge rivalry match and another brand new stadium. And you're going to start playing some really competitive teams. They're going to play New York City twice in July. New York City's very good, so they got to unlock this offense. You know, they went the week, two games, at Austin, at Philly, no goals, still no goals in the Grey Kits, and they've been shut out five times out of six road games.
That stat, by the way, is so crazy to me that we have not scored a single goal in that gray shirt.
No goals, because the two road goals are the two Zellerion free kicks in the black jersey at NYCFC. And the fact also that the only two road goals are Lucas Zellerion free kicks in one game, both within the last 10 minutes against NYCFC, is also concerning. And I think we knew that there was going to be road struggles, but that plays to the other thing I wrote about and what we learned. They are performing above their expected point total. They have 15 points, and their expected point total is 9 based on the analytics. So they're getting points when they need to, and they don't have to play spectacular to earn points. Shows the depth of their roster, shows how good this team is, and even with all these Gold Cup call-ups coming up in this week, this roster is probably still talented enough to pick up points on the road and get those 3 points at home. So we have to see. July is going to be a really important month. New stadium, big matches on the road, but offense needs to unlock. They got to do it sooner rather than later.
Now this doesn't address the issue of the lack of goals, especially from the run of play, especially on the road. But I'm curious if either of you have any thoughts, and Alex too, around the no call on the looked like to me like a sure penalty on Darlington Nagbe. That looked like, at least at the very least, one of those that you have the video assistant referee there for to at least review,
right?
No?
Yeah, I mean, I have to see it again to really get a better look at it. You know, obviously when you're live tweeting and covering a game, especially when you're at home watching from TV, mm-hmm. sometimes you miss those little moments and you try to watch replays. So I have to see the replay again. But from what I remember of it, it could have been an either way call, because the thing with the VAR rules is it's got to be clear and obvious, and their definition of clear and obvious varies between refs, varies between games. So, like, today in the Euros, as we're recording this, there was a clear and obvious tackle by a Swedish guy on a Ukrainian player, basically studs up into his knee, bent his knee backwards, initial yellow, reviewed it, it was an obvious red. That Nagbe foul, I don't know whether or not it's clear and obvious enough to review, but that just puts VAR back into discussion.
Oh, I think it's totally clear and obvious.
Yeah, I need to see it again.
I think in the replay that they showed, he gets hip-checked, and there was no attempt on the ball.
That's a penalty.
It's definitely a penalty, and at minimum, it should have gone to VAR. Even if he gone to VAR mm-hmm. and then decided not to give it, but it should have at least gone
to VAR. Overturned a red earlier in the game.
It was the reason that
was
not
against
called.
Philly.
No, that's against
Sorry,
that was against Philly,
If we had been playing in Philadelphia or in Chicago or in D.C. or in Orlando or basically anywhere other than Austin, I think you give that penalty all the time. I think that the ref just, they didn't want to give a penalty in the dying minutes of a game that Major League Soccer is very interested in, and they didn't want that first goal to come off of a penalty in this brand new stadium.
Yeah, and all these games have these refs with different personalities. Sometimes you're going to have a ref that wants to be the center of attention and call a penalty in the 91st minute, and then you have other refs that just want to see the game play out at the end because they don't want to affect the game that much when it's late.
But you are, by doing nothing, you are affecting and making yourself.
You know what was the center of attention for that referee? His hairdo.
Oh, yeah.
Because that thing was solid.
He was very, very proud of that. Absolutely. Just a nice, neat part.
For the record,
it didn't move anywhere.
I didn't think it was a penalty. I think it was, they kind of ran into each other. Darlington went down easy.
Ran into each other in the sense that one person was moving forward with the ball and the other person moved horizontally to bump into the player.
They both were running towards the ball.
It was a hip check as hip check gets.
Yeah, it was.
And I don't think any game like that has had so many chances and was, you know, I think it would have been very anticlimactic to see that end on a penalty that we are even debating. Like,
I wouldn't have debated it at all if they had given it. It would have been open and shut for me. It would have been like, he bundled them over. What do you want?
But I think you guys do bring up a good point, whether it's a penalty or not. VAR might as well check it.
Well, they did. I mean, he stopped the game and held the goal kick for about 30 seconds. And then he didn't go to the monitor,
To me, that's the thing. They have to develop more consistency with the checks. You have to have consistency with VAR as a whole. And with the checks, I think personally, when it comes to penalty kicks, potential penalty kicks, that should come down to a coach's challenge. Because we're seeing, since VAR has been implemented for the last 3 years, there's been so many more penalties. There's been soft penalties that have been called to the point where you can't even like move in the box or do anything, because VAR might look at it and call it a penalty. It's either or. But there needs to be more consistency. The ref is either looks at the monitor for every VAR check or doesn't look at the monitor. Because at that point, what's the point of having a head ref? The guy in the VAR room is officiating the game if the head ref's not looking at the monitor every time. He should have the last say. And to me, it's either look every time or don't
the
monitor.
If they give Caleb Porter a coach's challenge, I am willing to pay more money for my season tickets.
The entertainment
value in Major League Soccer would skyrocket.
What does soccer do for a coach's challenge? Do they have a little, purple flag or something?
I think that you have to hit a button on the sideline and like smoke comes out somewhere or something, right?
I would pay for a subscription of a Caleb Porter lapel mic during games. Especially in ones where he's yelling at the referees.
Fox is doing these mid-match interviews that they've done. So they talk to Josh Wolf and
he's
got to
keep it clean.
But he has to
keep
it clean for that.
Yeah, I want to hear what the stuff that's not clean.
Well, I was trying to bring it up on here, but the MLS soccer.com doesn't have that highlight on their highlight reel.
Of course not.
But I do think what made the difference in the game was Giassi Zardes not scoring that goal. I mean, he made a good run. I believe it was Ring that was marking him, like, stopped and thought he was offside, and he very clearly wasn't. And, you know, that ball comes. It is his left foot, and it is a bouncing ball that he doesn't make great contact with, but you've got to finish. You know, that's your best chance of the game. Even the Lucas Zelrayan shot that was a great save from Brad Stuver. And credit to Brad Stuver, who has become a very solid goalkeeper.
He might make the MLS All-Star team.
Yeah, but... You know, that as good as Zelrayan's shot was, when you're that close in a game like that, like, that's a chance you've got to finish. And, you know, Giassi just hasn't been. I know he scored two goals against Chicago, but he's got to find that form. You know, I know he's been streaky in his Columbus career and things like that, but you need to be able to rely on him in a game where it's 0-0 and there's not a ton of – he hasn't had a ton of chances specifically. And, you know, that was more disappointing to me than not getting a penalty kick.
The game in general was just really weird in the sense that I felt like there were probably six or seven moments during that game on both sides where I thought, oh, here we go. Here's the first goal of the game.
Yep. Yeah,
and in every single time, the player just screwed it up somehow.
Austin has no striker. That's the thing. Like, Dominguez and Fagundes and you know, those guys are decent, but they're not clinical clutch finishers. Zardes is that
sometimes.
But here's the thing that I find interesting. Last year we saw this team perform, we would say, at its best, you know, after they hadn't played together for two months at a time because of COVID. Now they're playing consistently and the performances are just not coming together.
Well, but there's a lot of injuries. It kind of comes with all that added depth of Caleb wanting to, at one point or the other, find out what he has in those people, and he had to put them in sooner than expected, I feel, because of all the other injuries.
And I think the big one is Artur right now. You know, I mean, as good as Liam Fraser has played, he didn't play as well in this game. Obviously came out at halftime, and I think Marlon Hairston has looked, you know, obviously had the chance against Philly and looked pretty good, especially early on in the second half against Austin. But you're missing Artur. Him and Nagby know how each other play. They play off each other really well. You know, both of them can make good passes. They can make good tackles. They read the game well. You know, I think Nagby feels more comfortable kind of taking over a little bit, kind of like he did on the potential penalty kick, when he's got Artur in there and, you know, just has that comfort with him. And, you know, that's a guy that they've really not had. I mean, he's played, but he hasn't been Artur this whole season with the hip injury and now out again, and we'll see how long he's out.
Who hasn't been injured this year? I think every single player on the team has had an injury and has been out from an injury for at least one game this year.
I think Harrison Offal has been healthy. Isaiah Parente has been on the bench every game.
Parente hasn't been on the injured list once.
Aloy Room.
Matan.
Well,
Matan,
he was not unhealthy.
No, Etienne was
he was not
at
medically
one
cleared
yeah.
for every game. Let's
yeah.
put it that
yeah,
way.
That's fair.
But that's the thing that's going to come down in this month of July with these big games. There's going to be forced rotation. The Gold Cup rosters are going to get announced later this week.
And we just touched on Giassi. If Bradley Wright Phillips isn't healthy,
who plays striker?
They have no. Alex, I know what you're going to say here, but they
it's
have no
time
natural
to bring
striker.
The Luis Diaz experiment
he,
to life, baby.
But he'll
let's
be
go.
Gone. He's probably going to get picked for Costa Rica for the Gold Cup.
Then it's got to be Josh Williams.
Right now, what you're looking at, Room is going to be gone with Curaçao, so there goes your starting goalkeeper. Jossie Zardes could get picked for the U.S. team. That squad gets announced on Wednesday, so he could be their striker. There goes your starting striker. You might lose wingers in Etienne and Diaz to Haiti and Costa Rica. Molino's going to be with Trinidad, and then Liam Fraser will probably be gone with Canada.
Does Romania didn't qualify for the Olympics, right?
They did qualify
for
the
Olympics.
Matan might go to the Olympics.
Might go to the Olympics.
So that might be another player that might be missing. But that will be late July, early August, while there's still games. But if you're a Crew fan, one part of you hopes, like, yeah, I hope some of these teams get knocked out early. Luckily, from a Kevin Molino sense, Trinidad isn't in the group stage. They have to play preliminaries. But they're playing Montserrat. And then if they win that game, they're going to play Cuba or French Guyana. You would think Trinidad could win those two games and make the group stage and confirm three more games. But Jossie, if he's on the U.S. team, he's probably gone for a month because the U.S. should be getting to the final of Gold Cup.
So is this a time where you see somebody like Sebastian Berhalter getting called back?
No. He's not coming back. Let's stop talking about it. They went a different direction. They want him in Austin because he's going to play more in Austin. Mm-hmm. They've added another player. Whether he stays in Austin after this year or not, I don't know. But Caleb has made it clear with his actions and a couple times with things he said that they're going to leave Sebastian down there for the year.
Pedro Santos, striker. Let's go.
Honestly, if I would put anybody on the roster at striker, if Jossie is gone and BWP is injured, I would put Matan. I think when you saw him first start against Toronto, he was confident in his on-ball ability and he was shooting. Then I think he started pulling back a little bit and wasn't shooting enough to be able to feed Lucas, to be able to feed Jossie. I think Matan is a good dribbler. If he runs directly towards goal, sometimes you see him run a little too wide sometimes. I think if he runs directly towards goal, he can be a good striker. Pedro's would be okay, but you need his defensive ability on the wing. I think you lose that at striker.
Yeah, but I don't think the formation that we play, like, no offense to Matan, but, like, you cannot cross the ball
to
Matan.
No, if Matan's at striker, they can't expect Harrison Afful and Milton to cross every 2 seconds.
MLS center backs are going to be taller than Matan when he's jumping, like while they have their feet on the ground. Like he's just not going to be a target forward. They're going to have to play it in.
Yeah.
And other players are going to know that. And so they're going to be able to defend differently and neutralize him in a way that I don't think you could with someone who is a little bit bigger.
He's
a winger to me.
Right, but if they just use his speed against, you know, these potential really slow center backs, like I don't think there's a center back on FC Cincinnati that can catch up with Matan if he gets ahead on a nice run.
I think you could put Caleb Porter in at striker for SC Cincinnati.
Josh Williams at striker, maybe, too.
Yeah. You could put Frankie Hayduck up there, and he'd score a hat trick. I'm not too worried about that. But
I think if Matan plays the way he played against Chicago, which, again, take it with a grain of salt because it was Chicago, but if he plays that same way against Chicago...
Big grain of salt. That team is bad, despite their result last week.
But, yeah, I mean, he has potential to score from that, which is kind of where Pedro is scoring from. Is from that winger position or, you know, the Justin Mira meat hook type of thing. So that's – but, again, it's still going to take him some time. But he's gonna have to play and he's going to have to grow really fast in this scheme with this team because they're lacking bodies.
Yeah, and he could work in this team. He really, really could. He's got the talent. And the performance that really catches my eye from him was when he came off the bench against Monterrey and was defending his heart out to try and hold that 2-1 lead. Yes, it didn't work, but he got some big blocks in that game too. He's willing to put his body on the line. And because of the likelihood that you're not going to have Etienne, you're not going to have Diaz and Molino because of Gold Cup, he's going to get starts. And then if he goes to the Olympics, then he's gone for a bit. But he's going to get starts early July, guaranteed.
Well, I want to look at, you know, just a couple of the other performances and some stuff that, you know, are these red flags. And one would be Kevin Molino. Obviously, You know, he's still coming back from that injury. I almost look at this, you know, upcoming international duty as, hey, look, this is a good opportunity for him to, you know, get his form back while playing against lesser competition, because he did not look like he was up to snuff in that first half against Austin. He didn't look particularly creative, like he was connecting with his teammates, and obviously his defensive work left a little something to be desired. Am I overreacting about this, or are there any, you know, real concerns with him?
I think it's too early from the offensive side of things. He's got to adapt to the system. I don't think he's the type of player like Lucas, who's just so special and can literally decide a game on his own that just fits anywhere and is good enough in MLS to affect every single result of a game if he just gets the ball or gets a set piece. I think Molino has to adapt to the system offensively. He is going to have to defend more. I mean, Caleb said that before he even stepped foot on the pitch for them once. So he's got to get that work rate up defensively, to me. Adapt to that system. But offensively, still too early to say.
Yeah, I'm not willing to judge him too much right now. You know, you were out for, what, the first 2 months of the season. He missed a good chunk of preseason when they're working on a lot of this stuff. You know, I think the one thing with the defensive work is you can take that as long as you're generating offense. You know, you want guys that can do both, exactly, like Pedro, but not everybody is going to. But if he is on the other end, you know, coming inside, combining, creating stuff, and you've seen little flashes of it, and I think that will only increase. You know, if he can, you know, not quite that Zellerayan level, as Ori mentioned, but just, you know, really help this team offensively, and I think he can based on what we've seen of him in MLS, then you can be okay if he's not tracking back as hard as everyone else. You still want a guy who's going to play defense. I mean, he definitely has to. That's part of this team's identity. But if he's giving you stuff on the other end, which he wasn't really in that first half. A couple times he got on the ball and came inside, but... You know, he needs to be at least generating offense if he's not going to be a defensive presence.
And then there's just one defensive presence. I've got a quick question about Vito Wormhoor. We saw him subbed out, but we're seeing him now, especially as Josh Williams is injured. Are there any concerns with him? He seems like he has... Obviously, he's coming back from a serious injury, right? And he's not a spring chicken, but... He has seen more than a few steps behind in the games that we've seen him most recently.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with him, you know, we've only really seen him play one game, right? That New York City game to start last season. Then he didn't play against Seattle, and then he got hurt in the first game, and MLS is back. But from my understanding of his game is it's a lot of aggression, it's a lot of physicality, and you're just not seeing that from him right now. And I think, you know, that probably has to do with some confidence in his ankle coming off the injury. He hasn't had a ton of minutes, getting more these last two games. But, you know, I think he needs to get that back. And that's when you'll start to see the player that the Crew signed. But I do think you're missing Josh Williams. And I don't say that just because of what we say on this podcast, but that guy's become
In this company.
Right. That guy's become a very good MLS center back. And, you know, he's always been solid. And, you know, he's been able to play multiple positions and whatnot. But, I mean... He was a key part of a championship team last year and the second best defense in the league, and they did not expect that. So, you know, credit to him, and they need to get him back in there because he's the better of the two between him and Vito right now. And maybe Vito takes that spot back at some point in this season, but, you know, it's tough to say this too after Ori and I were talking about this actually, about stuff to write, and I was talking about this same topic. And, you know, obviously they're coming off a shutout and a game against Philly where they didn't really give up much other than the one chance that got that was the goal. So it's hard to criticize.
That's your recap, by the way, folks.
Yes.
We're not going to talk about the Philly game otherwise.
But, you know, so they didn't give up too much, and, you know, they defended well. You know, so it's hard to criticize a center back after a shutout, in my mind. But, you know, I do think you aren't seeing him play the same way as when he came over here.
And the defense is earning them points on the road. Without the defense being as good as they are on a consistent basis, Mensa, Afoul, Vito, Josh, Milton, Waylon Francis, I think, has had a really solid season having to step in for Valenzuela when he was hurt. He's played fine. I think he's
defensively.
Okay.
Defensively, he's fine, but
exactly.
He hasn't contributed anything.
Yeah,
to the
but without the defense playing as well as they have on the road, they don't get all these draws on the road. That's the thing.
True.
Well, that'll wrap it up for the Austin talk. We're done with it. We're not even going to mention Alexi Lawless. But we will be back after this quick break. Sam needs a refill here. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back to talk about this game coming up here on Saturday. Columbus Crew opening up a new stadium, Lower.com Field. We're going to talk about it here on the Master Report. I hope you got all of that, Sam.
I sure did.
We're back. Oops. It's the Massive Report. Like, that
someone wants to give me a ride home.
Right on cue. Just Sam hits the record button. And it is raining outside here. And we are at Saucy Brew Works, the
it's
best
beautiful inside
bar now. In Columbus and place to be in the world. Is that right, Ori?
Yes. It's also a place where if your brew works, then you should be saucy with it. Right here on 443. West 3rd Avenue.
Murph's going to be pretty saucy when he has to drive home or bike home in this downpour.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this on Wednesday, can you swing by Saucy
weather.
Brew Works?
Yeah. Pick me up. I'm still here. Yeah. And I don't have a wallet, so I haven't eaten.
I fed them bread, so they have had some food. I menched up and gave them some bread.
Thanks, Dad.
So I lied to you guys earlier before I went off we went on break. I said that we weren't going to talk about that Austin game anymore, but we're going to quickly, because there was a watch party for the Austin game at gorgeous new LDC, Lower.com Stadium.
Field.
My B. We're doing abbreviations here. And I know, Sam, I think you got to be there. I, unfortunately, wasn't able to be there for it. But I know from all the supporters that were there that it was just an awesome event. Tell me about it.
It was pretty cool. So you get to experience a lot of things right off the bat. So It was a test to see how this plaza handles and what kind of happens on there. So the plaza is open year-round. It's not behind a gate. Neither is the team store. The team store you can walk into anytime, unlike old Crew Stadium. You do not have to go through a gate to get to the team.
As someone pointed out, because I tweeted that it was open on game days and non-game days, and someone responded with, "So it's open." And I was like, that's a good point.
I guess that sounds kind of dumb. But the biggest thing that you will notice is that it's as much touchless of a process as possible to come into the stadium. So you have your ticket on your phone, on your app. You scan that QR code at a gate. And then you just walk through another set of gates. You don't have to you don't have to empty your pockets. You don't have to be wanded down by any of the security people, unless you trigger it. But otherwise, you just kind of walk through, and it moves pretty quickly. So the line actually extended well past the railroad tracks, almost to Huntington Park, as I was coming in, and it was a great atmosphere. They actually had the game not just on the plaza, but also inside the stadium on both of the scoreboards. So they allowed the fans to sit in those southeast corner seats, and just kind of take in the stadium. There was the beer was flowing. There was concessions. They have it set up so you can bring in food trucks onto the plaza, and there was like 4 food trucks there. So it's a really cool setup. You can start feeling that like energy of fans rooting in the stadium, and just a lot of people were like super excited. It was, you know, a lot of people were like, I really hope they do this for every away game. I don't know if that will be the case.
Yeah, they said today that they plan to do viewing parties for away games if people continue to show up, but they probably won't have them in the stadium.
Yeah.
They'll just do the outdoor party.
So it was, it was a fun event, to be honest.
It looked like it.
It was really cool.
I just saw
weather
your pictures. I saw your pictures and stuff on Twitter. I think it's a really cool idea to use that space. I was kind of interested when that was all announced because they talked about farmers markets and concerts were the two things. I don't know how much concert going you'll have there. I think it fits like 200 people.
2,000 people.
Oh, I thought they said today. All right, well, you could have some concerts.
2,000 people.
But still, you're not having like what you had at, you're not having Rock on the Range or anything
that's,
like that.
That's
there.
That's what you have old historic Crew Stadium for.
Yeah, I would hope they haven't said anything about that. I would hope you can still use that for events like that, but I think it would have to depend on what else is going on there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you touched on it a little bit, and I know this was kind of almost like the prelude for the event this morning, the official ribbon cutting, where your friend and ours, friend of the pod, our favorite person in the world, Don Garber, here made an appearance in Columbus, Ohio, at the ribbon cutting for beautiful new Lower.com Stadium. Pat and Ori, I think both of you were there. You guys got to go there. Sam as well got to tour the stadium.
And
they
Ralph.
Still haven't let me. And they let Ralph.
You guys get Ralph access, but I've been on this podcast for 10 years.
Wow. Well, if you took pictures the way Ralph does.
I can take pictures better than Ralph does. Have you seen Ralph's
fairly
photography?
Mediocre. No, just kidding, Ralph.
Poor Ralph.
I'm going to bring my iPhone 4 and take better pictures than Ralph.
Ralph's pictures was good enough that Patrick kidding, used... Murph used them for his recap story.
To be fair, you were busy, and Ralph did a good job.
Ralph is a good photographer. I'm just kidding.
I'll beat you anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Ralph, if you've got friend of the pod, problems Ralph. With it, don't like put a review or anything on Apple or iTunes or anything. We only want compliments.
Five stars.
Yeah, five stars. Rate us, like us, whatever you need to do, but only nice things. If you have mean things to do, send them to Pat or email him particularly. Or send them in, like, snail mail. Call his mom. Do whatever you need to do, Ralph, but don't make the rest of us suffer.
Yeah. The Shalf Rudell review from last week that was one star was really hurtful. I don't know who that was.
But so we did... We had Don Garber in the house. Is he ostensibly? Is he in Columbus the rest of this week until the game?
Indeed,
do we know
are
where
you
he's
sure about
staying?
This?
He's not flying back.
I don't think so.
He was here yesterday.
He's got a jet. Why would he not go home and sleep in
his
own bed?
That's what your expansion fees are going to, folks. Don Garber's private jet.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be here Saturday, but I don't think he's staying here the whole week.
Did
you get confirmation?
If I am him, I would go home and sleep in my bed and live in New York. And
if I'm him, I would come to Endeavor and just see what's
lie.
Going on.
Columbus,
his Imperial Star Destroyer was not hovering over the stadium yesterday. So.
Well, now he's got the big scissors. I don't think he kept them. I mean, it was the same scissors they used for the Ohio Health Performance Center ribbon cutting, which they get at the big scissors store down on 4th Street, which is not a real thing. I just made that up.
I actually thought you might have been right. And I'm surprised Don Garber didn't steal them because I hear he was stealing water.
If you do wonder about the Don Garber and the scissors, go to the full gallery by myself and the Ralph Schudel on Massive Report. We've posted all our pictures from today, and there is Don Garber with a big pair of scissors.
Sam, I'm going to need you to go back and just cut Don Garber with the scissors out by itself and just put it on a transparent background for folks to be able to meme that. It is an absolutely incredible picture. I want you to share it or make it the like photo for iTunes. Yeah,
I'll work with Ori and we'll do a caption this kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful.
It'll
picture.
Be tough to beat that hard hat logo we made in early January with the picture of Caleb,
true.
Tim, Bez, and Lions with the old crew. That's going to be tough to beat. But this Garber scissors one might be the next one. We can do a caption contest.
We're talking it up a lot, and you should, again, absolutely head to MassiveReport.com to check it out and all the other great picks. But let's hear, you know, a little bit more about the event. You had the whole crew, quote-unquote, there. Everybody, the whole front office, Franklin County Commissioners, Columbus City Council.
Caleb Porter arrived in a private car.
Yeah.
Ooh, private car. What is a private car?
Yeah, he had a driver.
Oh, nice.
Dropped him off on Nationwide Boulevard.
Yep.
He only gets the driver. We should only let him have the driver when he wins. Like, he doesn't win enough away games to get
to
a
win.
Driver.
He
take away
walk.
The driver. Come on, Pete.
But
make him drive his own car until he can win away.
And we should mention Dr. Pete there as well.
Along with
Sweet D. Haslam. And Jordan Angeli, both of whom were looking fantastic in those golden blazers. I don't know who gave them that idea, but that is such a great look. That's fashion forward. It's incredible. We loved it.
Love it.
But you know, tell us a little bit about the event. Tell us about the tour. What are the cool bells and whistles? I know that's the big buzzword when it comes to the new stadium. What should fans be looking for and looking forward to?
Well, I would say bells and whistles wise, you're not going to expect like as many bells and whistles as you would at the training center, because there's not going to be a weight room at the stadium and all these cool little things. But
there might be a weight room. They said they're using every inch of it, so
yeah,
I don't know. I mean,
there's
maybe
no
there is.
There's no dead space, like literally none. There's not a particular space in the stadium for, you know, just storage or anything. So they're using every square foot, and there's 150,000 extra square feet for this stadium than Historic Crew Stadium. But in general, you know, you look at that facility, it's world-class. It's a phenomenal stadium. It's incredible that, you know, 26 years into this club's history, and, you know, they've opened two specific stadiums for themselves. It's going to be the third different stadium they've played in. And it was they're still working on construction. It's going to be done in time. They're right on schedule. But obviously, there's a lot of stuff to be done still. But those guys work day and night. They're going to for the rest of the week. It was kind of ironic because Dee Haslam was talking during the presentation. And we hadn't heard any construction sounds yet until Dee Haslam's like, we have got to thank the construction workers. We're working hard to make sure the stadium's done right on cue. And it will be. It definitely will be. But we got a beautiful tour. The suites are amazing. It took us down to this club down at field level where basically the players are going to walk out of this, what is it, the West Suite?
It's called the West End Club right now. But we were given a hint that it will be sponsored by Saturday. So yeah, it won't be called that for long.
Yeah, but the West End Club...
I mean,
Club,
the sign is there. We just...
We know what it is.
It hasn't been announced.
We can't say anything. But the West End Club is...
Jake, you're going to wait till Jacob Myers breaks it?
Yeah.
Probably.
Hey.
But basically, that club is going to be... You know, you could use that for so many different areas. It looks like you could have weddings there.
Yeah, that's where... I'm sure people have seen the picture of the gold chandelier.
That's where that, yeah.
That's where that is. And that can change. The colors on that can change. So, like, they were talking for USA games, that can be red, white, and blue. If they host other state championship games, you can change that. That was a really cool...
Right, and you'll have people down in that club during the game seeing the players walk out to the stadium. Beautiful door that opens up, and then you're right on the field. The grass looks fantastic. I would expect that it's probably going to be the best pitch in MLS with how
better than Austin?
Much better than
just
Austin.
Just the technology in that pitch is crazy.
The technology in the whole stadium is incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, unbelievable.
The do you want to elaborate on the
field?
Stuff on their
yeah,
field?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm gonna sort of read from my story here, but you can read more about it. I wrote about the whole stadium today, but
where can they read it?
On massreport.com, Bart.
Interesting.
PatMurphy.org.
How do you spell that?
Shopify.
Hydroponic heaters underneath the field. For those that, like me, did not know what that meant, that means that they can raise the temperature of the field by 20 degrees. So the example that was used, I don't remember the numbers he used, but you know, if you're in the stadium and it feels like it's 40 degrees
yeah.
out, then they can have it up to 60 degrees on the field. So the players feel warmer. The field obviously is able to thaw if it's frozen. So that's one perk. There's an aeration system that on a normal field, gravity would suck out all the water if it floods in about an hour, if it stops raining. They can do it in less than 3 minutes. So that Atlanta game a few years ago would be very different.
No more field squeegees.
Question on the heater. Can it also cool? I'm thinking particularly about... U.S. qualifying matches in, say, November. Could we make it, like, minus 30 degrees on the...
Oh, you want to make it colder. I see.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
I thought you meant hot days.
No. I'm thinking particularly in, say, the middle to late fall period is
okay,
when I was
see.
Really thinking when you would deploy technology.
I did not think of that to ask, but it would make sense that it could go either way.
That would be fantastic.
It can. I think I wrote about this a few months ago when they announced it, so I recall writing
okay,
that.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, those are things... Also, they've got, and I'm sure you've seen pictures of the field with the heat lamps, the big white things over top of the field. That is done to, because of the way the stadium's built with the roof, parts of the field at all parts of the day are covered by the shadows. So the grass doesn't grow evenly. So that is, it comes in and kind of recreates sunlight. And those are used all over. Ori pointed out that they use, I've seen them in EPL stadiums. Ori said some NFL stadiums use them nowadays. So that's, you know, that's good on the crew for being on top of that. But, yeah, the other stuff, you know, I mean, on top of the fact that the crew already has the best grounds crew in MLS, You know, having all this stuff to add on top of it to make the field better is only going to make, you know, games there more enjoyable for the guys in the field, and, you know, unlike Saturday or Sunday, I guess, more enjoyable for everyone to watch with the field in good condition.
Yeah, and those grow lights basically help to, you know, re-trigger photosynthesis on the parts of the grass that might not get it as much than the ones that, you know, are underneath the sunlight directly. So those things are going to help the pitch quite a bit.
It's science, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, Biology 101 right here on the Master Report Podcast.
That is a 10-cent word. Photosynthesis. He's going to learn you good, folks.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, in addition, you know, so there's going to be all these fancy things, right? And that's great. That's where the money comes from. You know, the people buying the suites, as Ori touched on, you know, above that room that he was talking about, there's a suite level where you have your own little room that you can step out on, and you've got seats out there that overlook the field, really good view. But the other side, they've already sold the 10, you know, boxes, so to speak, that will be the big money, the suite club area. And in that, you've got your 12 seats per company. It's companies that have bought them all, that sit out right on the sideline. But then you can enter into what they're calling the lower.com lounge. Is that right? That's this. You walk in. Well, first there's like a fire pit outside that if you're not that interested in the game.
It's like a patio.
Yeah, with fireplaces on either side. You can sit there. And then you walk in, and it's a big open space with a huge bar. Looks very nice. And then there's small rooms on either side where you can gather before and after the game. You know, those have drinks and stuff, and I assume food will be served. And then in the back of that...
So it's like a plaza for rich people?
Correct. And then back of it, they have another open space with couches and the biggest television I have ever seen, surrounded by six more giant televisions.
It's like a 90-inch screen surrounded by like 65-inch screens.
Pictures are in the gallery if you are wondering what that looks like.
I am very curious.
And part of, like, to kind of go off of something that we talked about earlier is that all of those spaces are actually open year-round.
Correct.
Like, it has, like, if you are one of the companies that bought one of those boxes, mm-hmm. you can have your work meetings there. You can come and use the patio. Like, on non-game days, you can do all that stuff. Like, so it's this place is accessible year round. Now you can't get into the stadium, like into the, you know, on the pitch or whatever, but you have access to those locations and those lounges year round.
Yeah,
I get it. They're all sold out for this season, but it sounds like the Massive Report can get one next year, and then we can record in there all year long.
We joked that the suite level with the 24
right
suites,
the press box.
Yeah, is the Patrick Goldan paid for Massive Report suite area, the whole floor, because he doesn't pay us, but he pays for those amenities. No, just kidding.
And when it rains, then you can just, if you have to bike home, you can just live there.
Yeah,
and they won't
point.
Kick you out.
Yeah, in general, when it rains and people are in that stadium, very few people are going to
just
feel the rain. Maybe just the players will.
Yeah, the photographers. But to Sam's point about it being open year-round, they're really into the idea that, look, we know that not everyone in Columbus is a diehard Crew fan, but we're trying to make Crew fans by making this an experience that everyone will enjoy. You know, the Nordec is obviously going to bring the noise. That's where that all starts. It's going to be fun. But they want people of all you know, walks of life to come into that stadium and have something that they can enjoy. And if that's the suites and things like that, and that gets people coming back, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. If that gets people coming back, you know, if they can bring, you know, say lower.com, who has one of the suites, for example, if they bring in clients and they see the stadium and are just excited about a cool stadium, even on non-game days, maybe that person then goes home and buys tickets, you know. So the idea is to continue to build this fan base, which I think is an interesting way to do it, having it accessible all the time.
And this to be a place for the Columbus community as a whole, where people can come and gather for different types of events.
Yeah, but not in those areas.
No.
You have to pay for them.
You have to pay a lot of money for those.
What they've aptly called, uncreatively, the pub, is also outside of the gates.
Yeah.
So, like, it's accessible. It's going to be open on non-game days, and it's accessible to the public without having to be in the stadium.
Maybe they'll show European Championship games, because my favorite place to drink no longer does. Sad face.
Well, if this becomes here at Saucy Brew Works, you mean? Yeah, I'm surprised they don't have Euros on, but it's
they had ESPN on. No, they had ESPN on, which means they were probably showing the Euro games.
I don't know what time Saucy opens, but
if worse comes to worse and it becomes a Dora area, you can just grab it from Betty's and just walk over.
That's true.
If Betty's is open, call them ahead of time. Right.
But I think to talk about what most of our listeners are going to enjoy at the stadium, it's not going to be the suites very often, I imagine. It's going to be either in the Nordic or, you know, somewhere else in that stadium. And walking around it kind of in the stands, there's not a bad seat. I mean, you know, I think we all would probably, would if we're not covering the game, are in the Nordic. That's the fun place to be in our mind. But, like, I talked to T-Bone last weekend. He's sitting in the south end because he's going to bring his kids and things like that. And, you know, I think you're still going to be a part of that atmosphere. When we walked on the field on Friday night, I think it was, when they did the media tour, they had music playing just from the speakers, and it was louder than most crew games at Mafre or Historic Crew Stadium. And they didn't even have all the subwoofer stuff installed yet. So, you know, that sound is, it's going to be an atmosphere for sure. And, you know, one other big thing that they pointed out as we were walking through the concourse at the old stadium, a lot of times, especially if you're sitting up high, you're coming down a bunch of ramps to get down. This is all short stairs. They're built so you can get in and out of your seat quickly. And most of this, from the concourse, most of the stadium, you can see the field. So if you have to go to the bathroom, if you have to get a concession stand or go to the concession stands and you're waiting in line, you can still keep an eye on the game, which I think is a neat little feature.
And there's TVs everywhere.
Yeah, right. Also,
yeah. Everywhere.
And we were in the stadium yesterday to do some Nordica stuff, and they had the drums out, and they were testing out kind of everything and trying to get a feel for it. And I think people are really going to be blown away by how much the acoustics have changed and how much those drums and just the voices echo in a way that I was kind of surprised by.
And you're bouncing off that concrete right there in the drum pit.
It was much louder than I anticipated, much louder. It's going to be an experience for sure.
One thing I want to add to what Murph said, which I thought was pretty interesting because they made a point to highlight this, is that even though the capacity is roughly the same as Old Crew Stadium, every seat is 28 feet closer.
The furthest away seat is 28
feet
closer
to the field, like, than at Historic Crew
not
Stadium.
Not eyesight-wise, but like distance.
Distance to
it's
the
steeper,
field.
It's steeper.
As the bird flies.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, and all the front rows of all the sections are lower than they were at Historic Crew Stadium, even in the Nordic.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. The Nordica seats are sweet. If you're going to Nordica for the first time this weekend, it's really, really nice. I thought they did a really, really good job with it. I think there's some idiosyncrasies with some of what we're used to with the TIFO and things like that. There will be an adjustment period for sure. But, you know, beautiful, beautiful section, really easy to get in and out of, so super pumped.
And it sounds like from what somebody told me, they want to try and fill that as much as possible after the march before they let anyone else in the stadium, so that as everyone else comes in, there's already the atmosphere going, which I think is a neat idea. You know, a lot of times, you know, the Nordic people are out still tailgating. You don't get an atmosphere really going until right before kickoff, so what I'm telling you is drink early, I guess, if that's your thing.
Well, and then there's the whole march to do it, but, you know, we're talking about the noise, how it carries. We're talking about some of the new things going on in the Nordic, and so we've got to touch on it. Ori, hit it.
Oh, you caught him way too fast.
Doesn't that just make you pumped up?
Bum, bum, jackhammer. Bum, bum.
Can you, honestly, actually hearing the sound makes it so much more absurd.
See,
like, right after a goal, you're going to hear that sound? Like, come on.
But will you? With how loud it already is in there?
We have to see, but I mentioned this in our little chat here. Again, what they're going to do after crew goals, you know, very similar to what other MLS teams do. A member of the fan section does kind of a little gimmicky thing. Portland, a guy basically chainsaws a giant piece of a tree off and takes a piece of wood.
No, basically,
a piece of a tree. Atlanta, they hit a hammer to a nail. The crew are basically going to have a guy with a jackhammer a piece of concrete,
And what's next? Are they going to like get somebody to like stucco a wall or something? Like what other like what
we,
other?
We
what's
talked
next?
About them building a house.
They need somebody's to build gonna, a house. Yeah. Lower.com mortgage house.
I don't want a house built from like little cobbled off pieces of concrete that but, like a drunk
well, good,
crew
because
did.
Yeah, crew aren't scoring enough to do it.
It's better than giving the little slabs of concrete to the kids in like the cosi room. That's better than
so,
that.
So here's a little context, and then we're gonna let Alex rant here.
It's so bad.
The idea, from my understanding, is that that ground at some point provided a significant amount of concrete for early Columbus or something along those lines. So there's some sort of historical significance. The Nordic, once they put out their statement, I know this got out today, it has a lot more information about the whys and the explanations. But what will happen to this piece of concrete in Portland, they obviously give that log to the player who scores the goal.
Which in and of itself is really stupid.
Where do they put...
If you score 15 goals in a season, what are you going to do?
It's like, on your mantle. It's on your
bonfire, man.
We could have asked Fernando Adi last year.
Diego Valeri could just glue them all together at this point and put four trees in his backyard.
But the crew's idea will be after the goal is scored, that piece of concrete will get placed in the wall on the way to the visitor's locker room. So the away team, assuming the goal is scored early enough in the game to do this, will then have to walk by the goals that they allowed, which is a little different spin on things. But it's still very much similar. I wish we had Ty here to get into more detail on the how and why of it and probably expound on this better. But Alex, give us your feelings on why this is a terrible idea.
Sure, Murph. Thanks for having me. First-time caller, long-time listener. I mean, I think that what it is kind of the next step in this long journey that we've been on with our front office over the past, I don't even know how many years, where they see something cool that another team does, and then they want to try to replicate that same thing here. I think we saw it with Drop It Twice, where they were trying to come up with some sort of like a pregame ritual. And now they have seen teams like Portland and Atlanta have success with a after goal ritual, and they want their own version. And so they thought, well, Portland uses a building material and a power tool, and so trees are taken and chainsaws are taken, but concrete is still available. And by the way, we found all these big chunks of concrete that we don't want to pay to like take away. So we're just gonna like give a fan a power tool and like have them hit it for a little bit, and whatever, it's gonna be good, right?
The sound is not as smooth as a chainsaw. It's very, rough and inconsistent.
Jackhammery.
Yeah, it's very jackhammery. That's a good way to describe it.
It's going
to
be super dumb, I think. And I've talked to a number of people who are involved in the process, and they are, thinking that this is going to be a good, unique thing. I also think that the front office, maybe suggested this and pushed it pretty hard. I don't know. But it's not something that I'm a big fan of. It feels super fake. And everything that we have ever tried in Nordica that's been kind of forced has failed. And the things that have really resonated with fans are things like Wise Men Say, which just kind of organically develop over time. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens with it. I mean, I don't think it's anybody's, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened. I think it's just going to be really weird.
Alex?
Yes.
I would like to compliment you on what you just did.
What did I do?
You gave it a chance. You said, hey, the things that worked organically work. The things that are not organically have the history of not working.
Yes.
But hey, let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
And I think that is about as fair as we need to be right now. And look, I'm not defending the front office, but if we're going to talk about logic sense here, it's like, yeah, they're going to try new things, whether they push it on Nordic or not. And Nordic will have to give some and take some. And those things will happen. But at some point, a front office has to get burned by something not working in order for them to learn.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to listen to these people.
Yeah. I think buying the jackhammer, which I've heard the front office has done in preparation for this.
I would hope so. The game's on Saturday.
Yes.
And I think they want them to score, even though the scoreboard today said 0-0 New England and the Crew for the entire time.
Well, just order off of Amazon with Prime delivery to come by Thursday.
Right. But on Friday, it said 4-0, which I thought was a bit ambitious. But
well, then the Austin game happened.
And then they had
the Austin game.
And then today it said 0-0 Crew New England at halftime for a good 3 hours because they're still kind of testing the scoreboard out there.
My favorite that I saw yesterday was that they were testing the player subs, and they subbed out Kevin Molino for Matt Lampson, which I thought was ambitious.
Well, today it was Susan's 30th birthday.
Nice.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Happy
30th
birthday,
happy
Susan.
Birthday
happy birthday, on the Jumbotron Susan. Today. Matt Lampson for Kevin Molino. I think we just found our new striker. If Josh is going.
Listen, he's a big
kid.
Yeah,
6'3", 6'4".
I've seen him score a goal before.
Mm-hmm. I think that he could do it in a pinch for sure. No, but in all seriousness, you know, it is what it is. My thing as like a longtime Nordeca person is that the front office is always trying to market Nordeca more and more. And this just feels like a marketing gimmick to me, and so I'm not a big fan. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I think for me, where I look at it is that this isn't, you know, necessarily just for Nordeca. I think kids will enjoy this. You know, I think a lot of new fans will enjoy it. I look at me as a Blue Jackets fan. The first time they shot off that cannon after a goal, it was kind of like, wait, what? What is that? I was a little bit startled.
Would scare the crap out of Corey, who can't even deal with fireworks.
But it grows on you. And granted, you know, maybe it was...
He gave you bread. Why are you being
seriously.
Mean?
Yeah, what the hell?
It's true.
Also, as a guy who's worked for a fireworks company, my NDA's over. It's all right. They're not worth it. Fireworks are very overrated,
What
folks.
Is the fascination
the
with
4th
watching...
4th of July is on Sunday, Bart.
What
you
is
can't
the,
say that.
What is the fascination
overrated.
Of watching things blow up? We don't like to hear stuff that sounds like gunshots unless it's colorful and in the air. What the hell?
Unless you're a Crew fan trying to destroy the bathroom to frame Anthony
Precourt.
You know,
or a photographer. Like, mm-hmm. We like fireworks. They're pretty. We take good pictures of them.
But we're talking about a different kind of destroying things right now with jackhammers, specifically, and strangers, fans doing it. And what I do like about this, where I do think it's a little... Granted, I am not sure what the process in Atlanta is like. I knew kind of that they did something because they got
a
little
the pregame
hammer.
Ritual where they have a celebrity come and hammer it in. Yeah.
So this seems like it blends what I liked when I saw kind of the longer explanation was one that this isn't going to be just, you know, a second mascot or a third mascot, I guess, if that is the case, because we've got SC like a Timber Joey, where it's always the same guy cutting it. You've got a different person from the Crew supporters who's there each week. You've got a community representative, somebody, you know, who's done a lot in the community. And then you've got someone from the team that, you know, that's going to be usually an alumni, something like that. It seems like it's kind of pulling from that sort of hometown hero thing where Frankie Hayduk would run a guy up to the Nordeck and kind of a pulling from that a little bit, as well as just, you know, the fact that you're involving fans with it and putting power tools, dangerous power tools, in the hands of amateurs. I find that funny, but no, in all seriousness, I think it's I'm willing to give this a chance. I think it. If it crashes and burns, it's going to crash and burn, and we won't have it, you know, after next year. But I don't mind at least, you know, giving it a shot. I think if it were just one, you know, one person, and we're creating this new designated jackhammer guy, although the person, whoever is jackhammering, does need to be jackhammer. Like, it's just it's like Doctor Who. Whoever is it that season, it's like that's, you know, that's the doctor. But I think it's going to be. I'm going into this with an open mind. I was initially a little bit skeptical, but I've been moved.
Here's the way that I get on board, and this is
you
what
get
they
to
need
jackhammer.
No. I don't want to jackhammer.
I do.
You don't get to jackhammer.
I don't want to. I want to watch the game, but this is what you do. For every Austin game, you sub out the concrete for a bathroom door.
You know what? I'm totally with that. I like this idea.
Well, Bart, I think you made a really good point that, like...
From historic Crew Stadium.
Well, sure.
What do you do for Cynthia? Wooden spoon?
Listen, since
I mean, that
aren't
break
worth
in 2 seconds.
Just into a giant bowl of Skyline chili.
Listen, you know how expensive wooden spoons are? You have no many of those you're going to need if you're doing one per goal. We're not made out of money over here, Ori.
But I think
they already spent $300 million in that stadium, Ori. They don't. They can't.
They
just
can't
go ordering hundreds
wooden
of wooden spoons.
I think
dude, wood is expensive right now.
I think you make a really good point, Bart. That it's not for just the Nordic and people that are, you know, well aware that this is similar to what Portland and Atlanta do. You know, you brought up kids, but even just the casual fan, you know, we
they're not going to do it.
They're just going to see
jackhammer.
It.
We're jackhammering concrete in Nordeca for the kids.
No, but you want to create an experience at this game, and you want the casual fans to see something different. This is something that most casual fans will have no idea
Let's
is
get a sword swallower. Right. No. So I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to tie this something to kind of different. Like the stuff that we've seen in the new stadium already. Sell the hard hats in the team store. Mm-hmm. And like, and by the way, I will say this, which I'm really excited about, is that if you go to the team store, they are selling.
Vuvuzelas.
They're selling.
I saw the picture.
Well, yeah,
they
are. Yes, but they're selling hard hat logo merch, and they're selling circle logo merch.
Well,
on top of the new stuff,
that,
of course.
I think that is this year because
some of that
MLS,
stuff is new.
Well, yeah, MLS did like the retro stuff this mm-hmm. year, so that's where the old logo's coming from. And they're still selling the circle logo because it's still current. It would. I hope I'm wrong here, but it would not surprise me if next year it is all incorrectly sized Columbus flag logo.
But you bring up the hard hats. That gives me a cool idea that could work with this jackhammer. Lean into the hard hats or give each fan a free hard hat. Have every
person
put the hard hat on as the guy's jackhammering, creating a sea of yellow around the stadium.
Kids would love that.
Kids would actually love that. And it gives you the vibe of, you know, NBA, NHL during the playoffs when the whole stadium is wearing one color.
It's like mm-hmm. doing the terrible talent.
If you make me put on a hard hat after it, like, so if we score a goal and everybody's going to be like, oh, crap, where's my hard hat?
Like, we're not talking about that.
Put under the
seats. I'm going to come find you during a game and put a hard hat
Alex
on your head.
Alex is not allowed in Nordic unless he's wearing it.
So true story, back when my brother and I attended games at Ohio Stadium, my mom made us custom crew hard hats. She bought, I think mine was orange because she couldn't find two yellow ones. And we like literally
drew the
crew logo and then put it on there on like white paper and then put tape over it. And that's what my brother and I wore to crew games. True story. I've got a photo.
Hey, you
got to
do what you got to do.
That's right.
But
some kids do like hard hats. I wore them when I was a kid. So
that's all I'm saying. Next to the Vuvuzelas, sell some hard hats. Kind of, if you're gonna do it, don't half-ass it by only doing one thing. You're gonna do all the supporting things, and you don't have to do the expensive hard hats, obviously. But you know, that's something cheap that you can sell. Oh, that's awesome!
Look, see, I'm not making
it
up. Custom.
You just have that picture on your phone.
Great
this was
radio.
One of this is like one of my throwback crew photos that I do like. You know, when everybody does that, we have a lot of Nordeca friends. They're always like trying to be like, "Oh yeah, let's put up OG photos."
The TBTs, as the kids like to call it. It's for the kids. Remember,
it's for
my TBT photo floats around the internet every now and then, and I really hate it.
I know exactly the photo that you're talking about.
There's a few of these, and I believe I may have been responsible for at least a couple.
Well, what I'll say is that the other thing I appreciate where if it's maybe this was kind of imposed, you know, by or the brainchild of the front office. But what I appreciate about it is that it is leaning very hard into the history of it and the three hard hat guys, specifically having three people in hard hats. I mean, they got and rightfully so raked over the coals for the rebrand and for, you know, the abandoning of the history and legacy. And so for them to kind of lean into it pretty hard, the hard hats and the original logo for this, I appreciate that. It might, you know, it might crash and burn. It might be uncomfortable. Hopefully no one gets hurt and jackhammers themselves in the foot or anything like that. But I appreciate them trying, and it's not like it's, you know, it's not like they're imposing the new crew logo on it or something like that.
We should clarify that the one person that will be doing the jackhammering will be certified and, you know, license to do so. So it's not just like, oh, one supporter from the Nordica is going to jump over and take over.
Is it like getting like a concealed carry? Do I just have to take a multiple choice test online and then I can do it? Like, what's
background check, jackhammer class.
No. That'd be far more than it takes to get a gun, but I digress.
either way, they're playing New England in the first game at Lower.com Field. Their offense is not doing well. I don't know if this jackhammer is going to be
exactly
turned on.
This may well be a moot point, and that will give us a chance to transition because we are going pretty long right now to the actual game that will be happening, where Columbus Crew will be opening up at Lower.com Field against the top team in the East, New England Revolution, Carlos Gil and Co. This is, you know, a New England team that you know, last year, I think, came on strong toward the end of the season, especially when Heal got healthy and into the playoffs. This year, they haven't really been taking anybody by surprise. They have been top of the table, or at least top in the East in MLS since, you know, the first week. A dominant team, and not the New England that we're kind of used to seeing for Columbus. Ori, I know you've watched a lot of New England. What do you expect for the Crew, and what should Crew fans be keeping an eye out against this team?
Carlos Hill, first and foremost, he's the best player in MLS right now. I would say he is the obvious front runner to win the MVP, and I know some people are thinking Chicharito because he's the golden boot leader, but Carlos Hill is, you know, contributing with goals, assists. He's the best player on the pitch in every game he plays, and even though New England lost to FC Dallas in their last game, the last place team in the West, because MLS is just a whack league, New England is still the best team in the Eastern Conference. You could make a case for them being the best team in the league, but I would still say Seattle is better. But these two teams played back in the middle of May. They played at Gillette Stadium. It's been a while since they played at Gillette Stadium when that match happened. You saw two great defenses colliding. Carlos Hill was influencing the game quite a bit as he was getting some good attacks on, and then a really good cross to Adam Buxa was the difference in that game for the goal, just a 1-0 win for New England. So this team is just well coached. They're very organized defensively, and they just have somebody that can win, or, you know, win games for them on his own in Carlos Hill. So the fact that it's New England, yeah, it's a nice sort of story. It's the same team that helped the Crew open up Historic Crew Stadium all the way back in 1999 when I was single-digit years old, and now they're helping to open.
You were alive in 1999?
I was alive in 1999. Shut up, Pat. I gave you bread. Lower.com Field here in 2021, same story. But it's a big matchup. It's a tough matchup. And the Crew, Jonathan Mensah mentioned it after the Austin game, they have to make sure that they get points at home every single game. That's what's going to keep them on pace to make the playoffs when it's all said and done, when we get to decision day in November. So, you know, at the very least, expectation-wise, get a point because New England's very good, but still, it's the first game in your new stadium. The building's going to be electric. The atmosphere is going to be amazing. We saw how that lifted the Crew against Chicago. Will it help lift them against a better New England team? I think it can.
Do we have any updates on some of the injuries we know? You know, Josh Williams, we touched on it a little bit earlier, has been conspicuously absent from the 18 the last couple games. We know some of the, you know, the wingers, Lucho Diaz, who's been out. Obviously, Artur not going to be available. I'm assuming same can be said about Bradley Wright Phillips. But any other updates on the injury reports?
We'll get more updates probably on Friday, but I don't expect Artur or BWP to play. Josh Williams is questionable. I'm not sure how serious the injury is for him. Obviously, no Molino because he's probably going to play for Trinidad on Friday before the Crew game. He's going to be on international duty early because they're in the preliminaries. But I would say probably still Artur BWP out at the very least. We'll have to see what those questionable players are like. But in general, whenever a guy's questionable on the Crew injury list, they're never going to start. They're rarely even going to play. But I think the one guy that you would expect maybe to be off the injury list and maybe factor in is Perry Kitchen. I think that's going to be a very important addition for this team. He played, I thought, fantastic against Philly in the opener, showed his leadership, showed, honestly, captain-worthy qualities. If Jonathan Mensah's hurt, you could give the armband to Perry Kitchen. He's just an MLS vet, strong number six to defend while Nagbe goes forward. And I think it'd be really good if he either started in this game or played in this game for 45 minutes and just get him on the pitch more, because that can really help in the midfield as the games go on. But attacking-wise, it might be a little bit of a mishmash of a front line. I would expect Lucas. I would expect Pedro. You can go either way on the right wing, probably Etienne or Matan, and then I would expect Jossy to start. That could be Jossy's last game with the crew if he gets selected for the U.S. men's national team.
Not ever.
Just temporarily. Temporarily, yes.
Well, unless, because I know we've been going along. Anybody else with any observations? Otherwise, I think we should probably get some picks in here for the inaugural match at Lower.com Field. Looking around, seeing none. All right, let's get it started, and we're going to get started with you, Ari.
I think it's going to be a very good game. I expect both defenses to come out strong, but I do expect the atmosphere at the stadium to lift the crew to a better performance. Caleb Porter, like I talked about for the last game at Historical Stadium, he probably told his guys, we need to make this entertaining, shoot, attack offensively, go after him early, be intense, be energetic. I think it's going to be the same story here, first ever game at your new stadium. I think it's going to end in a crew win. I only think it's going to be 1-0. You're only going to hear the jackhammer one time, people, and then the fireworks show is going to be fun for the 4th of July. So I think a 1-0 crew win, and then it's off to Cincinnati for Friday night football. Hell is real.
All right. So 1-0 for Maury. One a little bit of jackhammer. Smurf, we going to hear any jackhammer?
I usually give this a lot of thought and try and provide some ration and reason to our score predictions, and Ori just did that for us. But out of historical significance, I'm going to say 2-0 crew, goals by Jeff Cunningham and Stern John.
Hey, there we go, there we go.
Yes!
It's going to be nice to put those new concrete slabs in the hallway with players that don't actually play on the team.
I put them in the circle of honor at that point.
On the side, Stern John should absolutely be in the circle of honor. As should Jeff Cunningham. We'll get to that, I'm sure. Sam?
Cruz played pretty decent defense. I think maybe the scare of playing, of how Austin started and almost scored like mm-hmm. right in those first 10 seconds. So I bet Caleb brings them fired up and just walking into that stadium. And I don't know if they're going to walk through the fans on Saturday, but I think they are.
Go, yeah.
So every game, this whole thing is going to be. I think they're going to be pretty hyped up. I hope they score early. So I'm going to say they're going to go 2-1.
They might wear the gray jerseys also.
They're probably.
The gray jerseys are called stadium jerseys. They're horrific, and they're going to be worn, and it's going to be awful.
That's the only thing that makes me hesitant. Of like, they're playing New England. They're wearing the gray jerseys, which they have never won in this year so far, or scored.
What's terrible about that is we're forever going to look back on these pictures from this game and see them in these gray jerseys that hopefully no one's going to remember and just mm-hmm. be like, why did they wear practice jerseys for their first game in a new stadium? Sorry, that's a rant.
Jerseys weren't done yet. Just like the stadium's not quite done, the jerseys weren't quite done.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the 2-1, though, crew win.
All right, 2-1. Alex?
I think it's going to be 1-0 crew, but I don't think there's going to be the jackhammer, because I think like people are going to be celebrating and then forget to do it, because like that's typically what happens with Nordeca people. When you score, it's like, hey, we're supporters, and so we're cheering for the team rather than like powering up a industrial. I don't even know what that is, right?
That person has to be sober.
I think they'll be sober. I think they'll just be happy that we scored a goal, you know? I think that it's not going to work. We'll and then they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to fake it later for the cameras, you know, for marketing purposes.
it's going to be like the moon landing directed by Stanley Kubrick.
The game's on
faking.
ESPN.
We're kidding. They definitely landed on the moon.
To be fair, if they're really taking from Timber Joey, he usually waits till after the celebration's over and the game's kicked off, and then he gets going. Mm-hmm. So they may be able to do both.
Wasn't the whole point of this to like try to extend the... Like, just, you know, get the players a little bit off kilter.
They're already going to be flickering the damn lights. So let's just carry on.
So they're going to flicker the lights, and then they're going to have someone...
With a jackhammer.
Rev up a jackhammer. Listen, nothing could go wrong with this at all. No one's going to be injured.
No.
It's going to be great.
It is.
Welcome
right?
to American soccer.
Listen, Jimmy Haslam has a flawless record with all things, and there's no chance of anyone losing a foot.
I'm sure there's lawyers involved. There's lawyers involved with everything.
Oh, yeah.
Bart, what's your prediction for the game?
Just have to sign. Read the fine print on that waiver that you have to sign.
How many jackhammers will Josh Williams come and jackhammer himself?
So I appreciated Patrick Murphy's historical reference earlier to that 2-0 win in the first game in historic Crew Stadium. But because this is the second first game in a soccer-specific stadium for the Columbus Crew, I'm going to double that. 4-0.
I felt that coming.
The jackhammer is right next to the GCG back triangle. Ears are going to be ringing for a month.
They are going to be bleeding, and I'm going to be smiling.
Hey, will you go down and take a picture if it gets to 4-0 and see what Bart looks like?
I'm going to have to bring a respirator for all that, you know, concrete dust. And
I don't think there's going to be that much.
2 weeks later, he's going to have black lung disease.
It's the sound that's going to be.
Hold on. And I don't know if you know this or not. Is there going to be smoke?
So there is a smoke machine in Nordeca.
Okay.
It's only at the bottom, is my understanding.
Makes sense.
So there will be smoke. There will also be smoke bombs.
Okay.
As well. So you're going to have.
There will also be triangles. You know, like the little band triangles. And vuvuzelas, and one other thing that should be that we need to make canon right now.
Like
no, is that anytime opposing teams are taking a corner in the Nordic, we need to get vuvuzelas and just blow the vuvuzelas at them as they're taking the corners. Bring back vuvuzelas, folks.
Why can't we? Can we give triangles to the players?
Oh, I already bought two at Guitar Center today during lunch.
I was going to ask how many.
What?
Oh, I see. So what I'm saying is like we need to acquire all of the discarded triangles from the logo that they were going to use in the stadium, and then
instead
of giving a chunk of tree to a player after the game when we think they did a really good job, we can gift them one of the triangles.
But if you know anyone with the initials SC, there's a lot of SCs lying around that you could use.
Yeah, for the soccer cat. Well, that is it. You heard it. 4-0, Crew are going to win, but also there are more reasonable predictions. We'll find out. You're going to have to just tune in and watch that game, or hopefully you'll be there live in person. Come see us. Come see us at Nordeck. Come find Sam. Go on the field. Look at Sam taking pictures see him.
Sam will get hit by a ball once this season. Put money on it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of running on the field, one thing that I did see that was not covered in their tour, but that was covered in mine, is the jail cell that they built inside of Crew Stadium.
That's true. Every square foot is used. Oreo's right.
Yes, there is a legit holding cell in Crew Stadium. So if you get too drunk and run on the field, you will go to prison and they will hold you in a legit, like, escape-proof prison cell until Columbus Police Department can
you. You know who you are.
You know who you are.
That's where Crew Cat was kept while he was disappeared. No.
That was the first thing built. They just kept Crew Cat.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you to our terrific host here at Saucy Brew Works, the best bar in town and place to be in the world. 443.
Yep. West 3rd Avenue.
West 3rd. And here
if
in
your
beautiful
brew works,
Vic
then
Village.
Why not be saucy with it? If you're gonna read the copy, Bart, you got
to
do the whole.
I was trying to go by memory. But I appreciate and exactly you heard him. If your brew works, might as well be saucy with it. And I'm glad that you guys were here for this extremely saucy version of the Massive Report podcast. Tune in next week. Brian will be back. We will have the first game at lower.com field to talk about. We'll see you then. Bye, buddies.